What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, one of the things I find amusing about fighters, most notably boxing, it happens in UFC, though, too, especially recently. But I love when a fighter retires, and then a couple years later, here they come back again. And so now we have another fighter who is coming out of retirement for both an exhibition and a pro match. It's Floyd Mayweather. He is coming back. You know, he took a few years off, and now, you know, he's getting back into it with actually two fights. We have an exhibition. It's going to be between him and Mike Tyson. It's going to be held in the Congo on April 25th. They don't know, they haven't announced what channel or what streaming service it's going to be on yet. But this is just going to be an exhibition. It's going to be kind of interesting simply because they are two completely different weight classes. So that's going to be interesting. I mean, as far as boxing goes, I just kind of feel like Mike Tyson is obviously completely past his prime, completely really past anything. I mean, he really is just basically a gimmick fighter at this point. And not that he doesn't have, not that he doesn't pack a punch anymore. It's just he's not even remotely what he used to be. But taking a look at Floyd Mayweather, I imagine he's going to be almost at the level he was when he retired. I mean, he's one of the greatest boxers of all time, and I really kind of doubt he's lost a step. I mean, I imagine he's probably been keeping in shape because he doesn't look like he's fat or anything, and I mean, he owns gyms and has really just been staying relevant around the sport of boxing even through retirement. So I imagine he's going to come out and be just fine. I don't really expect Floyd Mayweather to have lost much of a step at all. I mean, of course, it's kind of difficult to say you can't lose a step because he's just getting older. But I mean, as far as when we're talking boxing skills between Floyd Mayweather and Mike Tyson, I'm obviously going Floyd Mayweather in that one. But the difference in weight class is going to be intriguing. But it's going to be an exhibition. It's not going to count for anything. So we'll see what happens with this. But at least as far as these gimmick boxing fights that have been going on recently, at least this is between two legit boxers, and we'll at least get something to watch out of that. Now, a real pro match now between Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao. We're getting number two between these guys, Mayweather versus Pacquiao 2. It's going to be on September 19th in Las Vegas at the Sphere. So that's going to be, I feel like that's going to be a very cool event to be at. I mean, both of these guys, obviously, they are also past their prime, but I can't help but think that this is probably still going to be a pretty decent boxing match. They're both still solid fighters. They're still in about the same age, same weight, same class, and it's going to be a pro match, so it's going to count. So if Mayweather loses, that will be a loss. He has never suffered a loss, so he's actually putting his record out there. So and Pacquiao, you know, I mean, he's still been he's been fighting over the last couple of years himself. So it's not like I think this is actually going to be a pretty good fight. So we'll see what happens in that one. But Floyd Mayweather looks like he is back for now, at least. But like I said, that's just kind of the cool thing. Recently, I'd say this is the only good thing about the stupid idiot Paul brothers and their stupid idiot boxing events that they put on is that this has kind of moved the needle for a lot of actual pro boxers and pro UFC fighters to actually start putting on their own events. And even if they don't count towards anything, hey, you're going to make some money, and hey, you're going to put on a show. I mean, that's for the most part what boxing fans want. I mean, most people who watch boxing, if they're watching the big fight or whatever it is that they're watching, most people aren't actually even fans of what's going on in boxing. They don't even really know what the records are. They don't even really know anything. They really just care about what's going on in that fight that night. And so that's actually what I think is cool, is that now we're getting all of the old school boxers coming back out of retirement, and they're like, hey, you know what? let me make some money and let me put on a show against a legit boxer here. And so I will say that's about the only good thing that the stupid-ass Paul brothers have done for the sport of fighting, because UFC is doing it as well. You know, a lot of UFC fighters have been crossing over to boxing matches or have also been putting on their own UFC-type fights themselves. So I really like seeing that, and I think this is awesome that Floyd Mayweather's coming back, and should be good to see him versus Pacquiao again. All right, so let's move on to basketball. Now we are in the full swing in the second half of the season, and the San Antonio Spurs, man, they are just letting everybody know that they are legit, and you better watch out for them headed into the second half of the season. So let's begin on Monday, where the San Antonio Spurs took down the Detroit Pistons, 114-103. Victor Wembanyama had a double-double with 21 points and 17 rebounds. Vassell had 28 points. Castle had 16 points and 11 assists. And this was just a beautiful game from the San Antonio Spurs over a dominating Detroit Pistons team, but they dominated this Pistons team and got a huge, huge win over the Pistons. Then also on Monday, this isn't really anything major to write home about. It's just, I hate the Sacramento Kings, and I thought it was hilarious. But the Sacramento Kings, they ended their 16-game losing streak by beating the Memphis Grizzlies 123-114. Russell Westbrook had 25 points, and Precious Achiuwa had 22 points and 12 rebounds to finally end one of the biggest losing streaks in the NBA this year. Congratulations, Sacramento Kings. You finally got to light the beam. Notice how they started that whole stupid light the beam thing, and it really just has basically gone downhill ever since you started that. So you might want to, I mean, I was going to say you might as well stop that, but obviously you hadn't done that in quite some time, especially this season. Hell, not even really last season. One of the bottom barrel teams last year as well. Then moving on to Tuesday, the Oklahoma City Thunder took down the Toronto Raptors 116-107 with no SGA, by the way. SGA hasn't played all week. He is expected to come back in their next game, I believe, tonight or tomorrow, sometime this weekend. Whenever the next Oklahoma City Thunder game is, that's when SGA is expected back. Now, I will say, they haven't played terribly without him. They definitely need him, but they have not played terribly without him. Like I said, they just beat the Toronto Raptors, a legit squad, 116-107. Cason Wallace, he was leading the way with 27 points. Dort had 15 points, and then Caruso also threw in 16 points himself. Then the Cleveland Cavaliers took down the New York Knicks on Tuesday night, 109-94. Donovan Mitchell had 23 points. James Harden had 20 points. And then Jared Allen had 19 points and 10 rebounds. And then also on Tuesday night, the Orlando Magic walked away with a big win over the Los Angeles Lakers, 110-109. LeBron James missed the final shot, as he normally does. But for the Orlando Magic, Paolo Banchero had a huge game. This guy's actually been turning it on the last couple of months. He has been having a monster season, especially as of late. He had 36 points, 10 rebounds, and 6 assists. And then Desmond Bane had 22 points as well in this one. Then on Wednesday night, the Detroit Pistons got a win over the Oklahoma City Thunder, 124-116. Cade Cunningham had 29 points, 13 assists, and Jalen Duran had 29 points and 15 rebounds. And these two just are a dynamic duo. Duran just owns the paint, and Cade just takes care of business and just really is orchestrating this offense. And they just look like such a great team. It is really going to be interesting to see if anybody in the Eastern Conference is even going to be able to compete with this Detroit Pistons squad heading down the second half of this season. Then on Wednesday night, the San Antonio Spurs got a win over the Toronto Raptors, 110-107. That was their 10th win in a row. Vassell had 21 points. De'Aaron Fox had 20 points. And I mean, it was shocking because Victor Wembanyama, he actually thought he had a terrible game. It wasn't a horrible game, but I mean, he really was not the focal point in this one. But that just goes to show you, this Spurs team, man, it is not just Victor Wembanyama led. They are a very, very deep squad, a very, very good squad, and a very talented squad. Then also on Wednesday night, The Denver Nuggets dominated the Boston Celtics 103-84, and Nikola Jokic had a huge double-double, just missed out on a triple-double. He had 30 points, 12 rebounds, and 6 assists in a dominating win. It was pretty much all Jokic all night. The rest of the guys on the Nuggets, yeah, they played a little bit of a role, but it was just all Jokic all night. Then on Thursday, the San Antonio Spurs got their 11th win in a row over the Brooklyn Nets, 126-110. But not only is this their 11th win, the San Antonio Spurs did not lose a game in the month of February. And they don't play tonight, and they don't play Saturday. So they have gone the entire month of February without a loss. That just goes to show you this team is legit, and they just keep getting stronger, man. You really got to watch out for this Spurs team because they are looking like a championship-level team. Now, obviously, things can change once you hit the playoffs because it's just a whole different level of play, but this San Antonio Spurs team ain't nothing to fuck with, and Champagne was the leader of the pack in this one with 26 points last night. Then the Houston Rockets got a win over the Orlando Magic, 113-108. At one point in the game, the Rockets were down 19 points, and then Kevin Durant turned it on in the second half, had the majority of, I think it was 26 of his 40 points he had in the second half of the game last night. He had 40 points, 8 rebounds, and actually now eclipsed 36,000 career points, so he just keeps on elevating up to the top in the all-time scoring list. But a big win for the Houston Rockets last night. And then another terrible loss for my Lakers against the Devin Booker-less Phoenix Suns. The Phoenix Suns got the win 113-110 with Royce O'Neal game-winning shot there at the end. Grayson Allen had a huge game with 28 points. Luka had a huge game with 41 points. But this Lakers team is so weird to me because, you know, you've got Luka having an MVP year. You've got LeBron, who's playing great himself. And then you got Austin Reeves, who's also been having a phenomenal year. But for some reason, this team just cannot put it together. And these two losses were close losses. And it's like, what, they just can't put it together. They are the weirdest team, and this is not what you want to see heading down the second half of the stretch. I mean, this is not the time of year when you could start finding yourselves. Like, you should have already found yourselves, you know, like the San Antonio Spurs and the Detroit Pistons. You know, those two teams have obviously found themselves, and they're playing the most consistent basketball. I mean, shit, look at the Oklahoma City Thunder. They don't even have SGA playing the last couple of weeks, and they still are playing championship-level basketball. Meanwhile, the Lakers have their top-tier players playing right now, and they aren't playing in sync. They don't look good at all. And it's very concerning because there's so many other teams, not only in the Western Conference, but in the NBA overall, that are playing much better basketball than them. And like I said, this is the wrong time of year to be finding yourself. So I'm pretty concerned about the Lakers right now. As a Lakers fan, I don't like what I'm seeing from them, especially body language-wise. I mean, it is so weird to see how uninvolved LeBron is on the sideline. He is no longer vocal. He is basically on the opposite end of the bench, and it's like, what is going on here, dude? Why are you not even pretending like you give a shit? It's very odd to see. And it's like I said, it's just a very concerning thing for me because we are now in the second half of the season, and you need to be playing your best basketball at this time of the season. And right now, the Lakers are not. They are playing very, I can't even describe what kind of basketball they're playing because they are playing good. But then they had these moments of disarray, and they're like, oh my God, what am I doing? And then that's when they lose themselves, and then that's when they lose the game at the end of the game there. So, yeah, very concerning for me as a Lakers fan heading down the second half of the stretch here. All right, so, you know, since, like I said, it's sports fan purgatory, so there's not a whole lot to be talking about. But thankfully, spring training is underway, and I love it. I actually, you know, when I'm bored, I can actually throw some baseball on because spring training baseball is on. Now, it's not as exciting as regular baseball, but quite frankly, I do watch spring training baseball a lot, especially if nothing else is going on or I just need something on. I'll throw some spring training baseball on. So it's been nice to actually be hearing baseball going on, but we are still about a month away from the start of the season. And so I figured, hey, why don't I name off the top five World Series teams for this year, who I believe the five teams are that that have the most potential to go to the World Series. Obviously, we have a long way to go. Anything can happen. I mean, injuries are always a factor. If any injuries, you know, there's always injuries. There's always a team that just keeps suffering injury after injury after injury. You know, kind of like the Braves the last couple of seasons. You know, they've got a stacked-ass roster, but it's just they've had to deal with the injuries over the last couple of seasons. That's really just taken them out, the wind out of their sails. But then also just some teams play bad down the stretch. Some teams start off hot and then end the season cold, or they start off cold and then end the season hot, or just play completely consistent, amazing baseball all the way throughout. But these are the top five teams that I believe have the best chance at winning a World Series just based on their roster. I almost was going to do the top five World Series teams other than the Dodgers, but really, when you actually look at the Dodgers roster, they actually have some holes. So let's go ahead and begin with the Dodgers, because I obviously have them number one, and that's just kind of the order I'm going to do it in. I'm going to go one through five. And this isn't necessarily in order, but it kind of is. I'm just kind of doing a mishmash of everybody, but I really kind of am doing it in the order of who I believe is the top dog. And it's obviously the Dodgers. They are the two-time defending World Series champs. And they signed the biggest free agent in the offseason with Kyle Tucker. So they've only bolstered their offense. They've just made it's even more depth, because even beyond Tucker, it's like now you got Mookie Betts, a former MVP. You've got Ohtani, an MVP. And then you've got Freddie Freeman, another former MVP. So those are like their MVPs, those four candidates right there that I'm talking about when you include Tucker as well. He hasn't won an MVP, but Tucker is the type of guy who is playing MVP-level type baseball. And he just only makes his team better. But then it's like, you have all their other role players who are still there, who offer them a whole bunch of offensive firepower. They're also great defensively, but I will tell you, the Dodgers do have a hole, and their hole is their starting rotation. I actually don't think their starting pitching rotation is that deep. Now, of course, Ohtani, it looks like he's going to have another full year at starting pitcher this year, so that's good. And you know, he's a killer, so that he's gonna pitch well. You got Glass now as well, but you know, and then you also got Snell also, but it looks like he's going to start the season off on the injured list. But beyond those guys, there's a lot of question marks to be had with the starting pitching rotation and even the bullpen for the Dodgers. So if there's a question with the Dodgers this year, it is their pitching. But at the same time, it's still the Dodgers. They're that team that's always making moves all the way up through the trade deadline. So, hey, knowing them, they could still sign free agents right now. There's still guys out there. Or they could trade for somebody. There's always those possibilities. And you just never know what's going to happen, especially come the trade deadline. So don't be shocked if the Dodgers bolster this rotation at some point during the season. But if there is a weakness, it's going to be their pitching. But notice that's an if. That's a big, bold, underlined if. Because I expect the Dodgers to reign again. I don't expect the Dodgers to fall off. I expect them to be one of the best teams in the league, and I expect us to have to hear about this stupid motherfucking team all the way through the playoffs. So, obviously, I'm not happy about it, because I fucking hate the Dodgers, but it is what it is. All right, so then at number two on my top five World Series teams, contenders this year, I have the New York Yankees. For me, the New York Yankees actually have the best starting pitching rotation. When you take a look at Gerrit Cole, is coming back off of his Tommy John surgery from last year. You have Max Fried coming off of an amazing Cy Young winning year last year. You have Carlos Rodon, who actually finally looked like the old Carlos Rodon last year. And then you've got Cam Schlittler, who just came out of nowhere last year. And I just kind of feel like this Yankees starting pitching rotation probably going to be really difficult to score on. And their bullpen, I have a lot of questions with their bullpen. But I feel like their starting pitching is going to be the starting pitching that actually is probably the deepest. and probably going to go for the longest innings pitched. I believe this is the type of rotation where we could see the good chunk of them going six or more innings potentially. Now, Cole, he's obviously going to be eased into the season because, you know, Tommy John's a big deal and you don't want him to blow out his elbow again. But these are some of the top dog pitchers in the game. And I just look at this Yankees starting rotation and go, you're not going to be able to even get on base. If you do get on base, it's going to be really difficult to even score if you're on base. And then you're probably going to be seeing these starting pitchers to about the sixth inning. Their bullpen, while it's questionable, their batting order from last year is pretty much the same. And if you don't remember, the Yankees were mopping everybody up last year when it comes to the offensive side of the ball. They had zero issues offensively. It was really their bullpen that was the issue last year. So if they're able to kind of keep things going with the starting pitching rotation and they do what they do, the Yankees, I feel like, are one of the best teams hands down this year. Of course, you got Aaron Judge, amazing baseball player, and who knows what the hell he's going to do. But then you've got, they re-signed Bellinger, which I think they absolutely needed to do. Giancarlo Stanton, he's going to be out there. They traded from the Marlins a couple years ago. He's been playing third base, second base, shortstop. Jesus Christ. Why can I not remember his name? Oh, Jazz Chisholm. He's another one where it's like, if he's healthy, you got to look out for Jazz. He is a wild card out there, and he's sneaky. He's great at stealing bases. So if that dude's healthy, I'm really looking at the Yankees as one of the top dog teams this year in baseball. Then at number three, I'm a top five World Series contenders. I have the Detroit Tigers. They had an amazing regular season last year. Tarek Skubal coming off of two Cy Young Award winning years. And not only were they one of the top starting pitching rotations last year, they are adding one of the best pitchers in Framber Valdez, who's been with the Houston Astros throughout his career. And he's been one of the top dog pitchers. He's exceptionally consistent. The only thing that stops Valdez is injuries. He's one of those guys. That is it that stops him is injuries. Other than that, he is exceptionally reliable and really difficult to score on. Very good defensively as well. They also signed Justin Verlander. Now, I know, we all know Justin Verlander is past his prime. But I think this is exactly what this Detroit Tigers starting pitching rotation needed. Because after Skubal, you've got Flaherty, who's a good pitcher, but he has his shaky moments. You've got Casey Mize, who's another really consistent guy, but he has his shaky moments. So I think Valdez and Verlander, they add a lot of depth to this starting pitching rotation, and I feel like the Tigers are going to be another team that are really, really difficult to score on. They've got an excellent bullpen as well, and offensively and defensively, I like this team, and I just think the Tigers are really just going to take off from what they did last year and not only have a good regular season, but I think this time the postseason is going to be a little bit different than it was last year, because you remember last year in the postseason they kind of shit the bed but had a great regular season. So I think it's going to be the opposite this year, especially because now they've really shored up that starting rotation. Then at number four in my top five World Series contenders, I have the Philadelphia Phillies. This is another team where I look at them and they are really complete. Starting rotation from top to bottom, very difficult to score on, really solid bullpen, and then batting is just insane. And defensively too, you got Trey Turner out there, and then they brought back Schwarber, of course, so it's like there's offense right there. And then, of course, Bryce Harper. So I just look at the Philadelphia Phillies. They just have an excellent roster. And they've just been that team that's always hovering there. And you just really can't count them out. And like I said, starting rotation is key to me. If you have a really good starting pitching rotation, notice Other than the Dodgers, you know, I'm talking about the Yankees starting rotation, the Tigers starting rotation, and now the Phillies starting rotation. I look at those three rotations and I'm like, that's difficult to score on. And if you can't score on those guys, they're also very capable of scoring a lot of runs on their own. It's just very difficult to keep up with. And then when you've got starters that are capable of going in the sixth, seventh, or maybe even get complete games, then what are you going to do? You're going to lose. That's what you're going to do. And so it's just really difficult to score on a great starting rotation. And so when I look at a starting rotation that's got at least three or four dudes that you just can't get past, like the Yankees, I look at you and go, that's top dog stuff, especially once you hit the playoffs. And then rounding out my top five World Series contenders this year, I have the San Diego Padres. Yeah, I have the San Diego Padres. I like what I've been seeing from them over the years. And they've been silently building a really, really good roster here. Now, when it comes to hitting, they have zero issues. This is a offensive, heavy, heavy team. Defensively, one of the top tier teams. I expect the Padres to be one of probably the top five defensive teams in the league, hands down. I really, really like what these guys what they have from top to bottom when it comes to their roster, when it comes to the defensive side of the ball. But then when you look at the pitching, they've really been starting to build this not just the starting rotation as well, this bullpen. I kind of feel like this is a team where it's like if their starting pitcher gets blown up in the first or second inning, it doesn't matter. They're going to bring somebody in from the bullpen. They have a very, very deep bullpen that they actually have started building since last season. So to me, the San Diego Padres are going to be a wild card team to me. And by wild card team, I don't mean like a team that just backs in as a wild card team. I mean, I feel like they're that team that nobody's really expecting is going to be dominating, but I think they're actually going to give the Dodgers a run for their money in this division. Now, that doesn't mean I think the Dodgers are going to lose the division, but I just kind of feel like the Padres are going to make it difficult for them to completely outright run away with the National League West as they normally do. And not only do I think that, I think the Padres are actually a legit squad to actually not only make the World Series, but to win it as well, just because they have so much going on. They've got dudes like Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis, and Jackson Merrill. I feel like he's going to be just a nice little solid piece that just really takes over this season. And like I said, I really like their starting pitching rotation. I really like their bullpen. And I just really like what this squad does in just every facet of the game. And so I actually look at the San Diego Padres to be one of the top tier teams this year and also one of the World Series contending teams. All right, let's talk some NFL. You know, we've got the free agency period is right around the corner. I believe it's a week or two out. So let's go ahead and just rattle off the top five free agents this year. And you can franchise tag dudes right now, and it looks like one is already going to be headed that direction, and I kind of expected that anyways. But let's go ahead and start it off. I'm going to do 1 through 5 on this one as well, beginning with my top number one free agent, and that is, of course, George Pickens. He's been wide receiver with the Dallas Cowboys this year. The Cowboys actually just announced today they are going to franchise tag him because they are trying to work out a deal. None of this is surprising to me. I already said this was going to happen. They're going to franchise him, and then they're going to work out a deal because this is what Jerry Jones does. Jerry Jones loves his contract drama in the offseason. It's how he keeps the Cowboys relevant and keeps them always in the news. It's what he's literally done it every single year for like what, the past 5-6 years? I mean, it's probably even longer than that, but it's just every single year there's always a contract dispute. And this year is with George Pickens. And I fully expect them to sign him to a long-term deal. I don't see this as a Micah Parsons thing because last year, you know, I wanted us to keep Micah Parsons, of course, but defense and offensive players are way different. You look at them differently. And to me, George Pickens, you got to keep him. He was a huge factor in why our offense was so great last year. And if we want to keep it moving, we got to lock George Pickens in. We already locked in Javonte Williams, which those were my dudes. I was like, Cowboys, if they want to keep it moving, they got to lock in Javonte Williams, which they did, and they got to lock in George Pickens, which we basically did. Franchise tag basically puts him out. I mean, they did a non-franchise tag, or a non-exclusive franchise tag, which means he can negotiate with other teams, but the Cowboys, there's a few, the Cowboys can actually match the offer or whatever, or they'll get draft picks. There's a whole bunch of things that come along with that non-exclusive franchise tag. But like I said, I fully expect the Cowboys to lock George Pickens in for sure, because they got to keep it moving, and George Pickens was a huge deal. But regardless of what happens with the Cowboys, he most certainly is going to be a hot ticket item for any team looking for a wide receiver this season. Then at number two on my top five free agents, I have center Tyler Linderbaum. He has been with the, he has spent his career so far with the Baltimore Ravens, blocking up front for Lamar Jackson. And he's just, he is a top-notch center. And if you want to have a successful offensive line, you need yourself a top-notch center. He's definitely going to be the most sought-after center this year. I wouldn't be shocked if the Ravens actually do re-sign him, but it does look like, you know, since the Ravens have a new coach, it's a whole new regime, they might want to just do something completely different and go a different route. But also at the same time, he does have a rep with Lamar Jackson, and so, hey, he might want him back. But who knows? Either way, whoever Linderbaum signs with, they are getting a damn good center, and he's definitely going to be one of the top-notch sought-after centers in the offseason. Then number three on my top five free agents, I have Trey Hendrickson, defensive end. He's spent all his career with the Cincinnati Bengals. He's pretty much been going back and forth with them for the last, what, two, three seasons now for with the contract, and we all pretty much knew that this is where they were going to end up with him being a free agent at some point. It does not look like the Bengals are going to re-sign him. They have said it's not completely out of the realm of possibility, but I mean, if they didn't re-sign him when they could have these last couple of seasons, why would they do it now? And the Bengals just aren't that type of team to really start spending a lot of money. And I'm really not, I really wouldn't be surprised if they just move on, because it kind of feels like, hey, it's time to move on. But Trey Hendrickson, he's definitely one of the top defensive ends available in free agency. He's absolutely a game changer. He's that type of defensive end where he's absolutely going to make a huge difference on your defense, whether he's the number one or whether he's just a guy who is adding in and just being that dude. But I don't expect him to sign with the Bengals, and it's going to be intriguing to see where he actually ends up signing. Only drawback with Trey Hendrickson is he's an injury-prone player, but when the dude's healthy, he is one of the top defenders in the league. Then at number four on my top five free agents, I have Odafa Owe. Now, I know he's not a sexy name to a lot of people, but he is a top-notch defensive end. I was actually considering putting him above Hendrickson because he is younger than Hendrickson. And if you don't know Owe, he used to be with the Baltimore Ravens. He started with the Ravens, and then I believe he was with the Chargers this last season, if I remember correctly. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure he was just with the Chargers. But he is one of the most reliable defensive ends you are going to see. He is just like Hendrickson. As a matter of fact, I feel like Owe is the type of defender who could absolutely lead the charge on a defense. He is that dude. When he played with the Ravens, he was a beast. He was an absolute beast with the Ravens. So I expect him to be an absolute beast with whoever he signs with. I really just like his skills. He's really fast. He's able to get at the quarterback. He's just a beast. That's really all there is to it. And like I said, I was really considering putting him above Hendrickson just because he's a couple years younger than him. And, I kind of feel like the age makes him a little bit more reliable than Hendrickson, whereas Hendrickson, you're definitely getting the end of his career, where Owe, you're probably getting the prime of Owe's career. So I kind of feel like Owe could be a great game breaker or a game changer for certain defenses, especially teams that are kind of like on the cusp of being like a really great team, kind of like maybe a Buffalo Bills might want him on there, or maybe like a Jacksonville Jaguars maybe could add him in there, San Francisco 49ers type of team, where it's like he doesn't need to be that guy, but he's going to be that guy if you need him to be. But I really like what I see from Owe, and he's definitely going to be a great player wherever he goes. And then rounding out my top five free agents, I have Rashid Shaheed. His primary position is wide receiver, but to me, he is a Swiss Army knife. He is a secret weapon that I feel like any team could use. And why is that? Not at the wide receiver position. While he is a good wide receiver, he's a very capable wide receiver. I would not call him one of the best wide receivers. But when it comes to kick returns and punt returns, Rashid Shaheed is that dude. He is that. There always is a guy. Comes around about every 5 to 10 years. We just have that really amazing special teams guy who just comes around and is super unstoppable. And wherever he goes, he is a prime factor. And Rashid Shaheed was that. I mean, he was with the Saints to start the season. And he was solid for them, especially on special teams. Then he gets traded to the Seattle Seahawks and is a huge factor in why they get all the way to the Super Bowl and win it all. Now, obviously, he's not the dude, but he had a couple of kick and punt returns that were huge, huge plays on their way to the Super Bowl at the end of the regular season, in the playoffs, and just on their way. So he was a huge, huge, huge factor. I really like Rashid Shaheed. I kind of feel like whoever gets him is getting such a secret weapon that it's like having these really good kickers nowadays. You know, now we have about a handful of kickers now in the league. It's not just Brandon Aubrey. I love Brandon Aubrey, and he is an excellent kicker too. He's a great weapon to have. But there's about five kickers in the league right now who are dudes who are capable of kicking it so far where you're like, well, it's 4th and 4, and we're at our own 45-yard line. Okay, well, we could bring our kicker out there and see if he's got the leg. And that's a great weapon to have. And so is a great kick/punt returner. And that's what Rashid Shaheed is going to provide to whoever signs this guy. Now, don't be surprised if the Seahawks re-sign him, but I don't know what their salary cap situation's like. I don't really know where their head mindset is at. He might have just been that dude they were trading for just to make a Super Bowl run. But whoever Rashid Shaheed ends up with, I think is going to be he's going to be a great secret weapon to have. And he's definitely going to be a great factor, especially in the kick return, punt return game. And if you just need like a third string or second string type of wide receiver, he's definitely going to provide you that, but he's definitely not going to be your number one. But when it comes to special teams, he is going to be a great secret weapon to add to your team. All right, y'all, enjoy the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.